This is Second Look. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director. Thanks for joining me today. We are just 2 days away from Election Day in Virginia, so we devote the next half hour to my interviews with the three candidates for governor. We begin with my phone conversation with Dr. Ralph Northam, the current lieutenant governor and the Democratic nominee for governor. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you said that you support the construction of the Atlantic Coast Natural Gas Pipeline as long as it passes water quality and environmental scrutiny, and if the route of construction can be tweaked to cause the least amount of environmental disruption. Is that right?
Yes, and as you know, the final decision will be made by FERC. Right. They have already come out with their opinion. We're now waiting for the opinions, the work to be done by our state agencies, DEQ, and then the Corps of Engineers. And so I have said all along, if this is done with environmental responsibility, if it's done keeping property rights in mind, and that it's done with transparency and science, then the pipeline will move forward. If DEQ says that it's not safe, it's not environmentally sound, then I will respect their decisions and we will move forward from there.
Are you at all concerned that DEQ might not be completely objective in the process? There were some stories earlier about a company called 3E that also has links to Dominion, and DEQ had hired 3E for some consulting. Does that link concern you, and are you fully confident that DEQ is going to be objective in that process?
Well, I have confidence, Bob, in our state agencies, and we need to let them do their work. And I think for anybody to sit back and second guess or even try to influence DEQ would be irresponsible. And so I have confidence in DEQ. They are doing their work. They have had public comment sessions. They, you know, are looking at the permitting process. And when they make their decisions, I will stand with DEQ.
Well, I want to ask a bigger question, if I may, a bigger issue surrounding the construction of these pipelines. According to the Virginia Public Access Project, over the last 20 years or so, Dominion Energy has been the biggest corporate political donor in Virginia. They have donated to your campaign, and in addition to many others. And critics say that all that money is one reason why the company gets favorable regulatory treatment. In your view, is that a problem? And if so, what would you do about it?
Well, my decisions are always made in the best interest of the public. That's who I work for. I'm employed by the Commonwealth of Virginia. I work for the voters, so I've always made my decisions based on that, whether it be, you know, doing the smoking ban in restaurants, standing up to offshore drilling, standing up to against uranium mining. That's been my track record. I have also introduced a plan for campaign finance reform, and in which case I don't think legislators should take contributions from corporations. But before we get to comprehensive campaign finance reform, we need to do redistricting. I think that has to be the first step. So as you know, I support drawing the maps fairly to get rid of the gerrymandering in 2021. Once we do that, then I think we'll be able to tackle other issues like comprehensive finance reform.
Well, there's another controversial issue that you have waded into, and that is the question over Confederate statues and monuments. Your daughter went to the University of Virginia. You support removing Confederate statues and monuments. How do we prevent another day like August 12th in Charlottesville?
Well, I think, first of all, we need to talk about what happened on August the 12th in Charlottesville, and that was that a group of white supremacists, neo-Nazis, KKK members, marched into a beautiful city, Charlottesville, a wonderful university, the University of Virginia. And as you said, our daughter Aubrey graduated from the University of Virginia in 2013. But these individuals rolled in, marched in with torches, with shields, with semi-automatic weapons, doing nothing more than promoting fear-mongering, spewing hatred and bigotry. And, you know, I was proud to stand with Governor McAuliffe, our Attorney General Mark Herring, and call these individuals out for who they were and who they are, and that is a group of white supremacists, and tell them don't ever come back to Virginia again. I regret that our president didn't do the same. I regret that my opponent, Ed Gillespie, didn't denounce the president. That's what leadership is about. That is the message that Virginia needs to hear. We need to heal in Virginia. We need to have a reconciliation process. So my position, Bob, on statues, if a statue gave these white supremacists an excuse to come into a beautiful city, spew their hatred and bigotry, kill two of our state police, and kill Heather Hyde, then we need to have a discussion about statues. And personally, I think if there's a statue that's divisive, that promotes hatred and bigotry, it needs to be in a museum with historical context. I have left this decision up to the localities. And we also need to tell the rest of the story. There are a lot of civil rights leaders right here in Virginia, like Oliver Hill, like Barbara Johns. We need to tell their story. And we also, Bob, we have monuments that aren't built of bronze that we need to discuss, things like the inequities in access to health care, inequities in access to education, inequities in access to voting rights. And so these are also discussions that need to take place in Virginia, not only for our generation, but for future generations, because we live in a very diverse society. That means that we need to be inclusive. We need to welcome people to the Commonwealth of Virginia. Our lights need to be on, our doors open. And that's the way we'll move forward if I'm the next governor.
Is there anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to mention?
Well, one of the things, Bob, that I do like to talk about and I'm proud of, I'm a veteran. I served in the United States Army for 8 years. I took care of wounded soldiers during Desert Storm. And we have worked very hard over the last 4 years to make sure that Virginia is the most veteran-friendly state in the country. And I will continue to stand up for our veterans because they have risked their lives. Some of them have given the ultimate sacrifice to protect our freedom. We ended homelessness effectively. We were the first state to do that. Last year, I'm very proud of the work we did in that area. And then we have the V3 program, which has been very successful. That stands for Virginia Values Veterans. Our goal was to hire 20,000 veterans by 2018. We've now gone past 20,000, even past 25,000. We're on our way to 30,000. So we want to make sure to continue to make sure that Virginia is the most veteran-friendly state in the country. And that's something, as a veteran, I'm very proud of.
Dr. Ralph Northam is the current Lieutenant Governor of Virginia and the Democratic nominee for governor. Dr. Northam, it was a pleasure talking with you. Thanks very much for your time.
You as well, Bob. Thanks for having me on today.
Next, I spoke with Cliff Hira, the Libertarian nominee, who sat down to talk in our studio in Harrisonburg. You've got positions on health care that I wanted to ask you about because that is such an important issue. And correct me if I'm wrong on any of this. You're opposed to Medicaid expansion. You're in favor of a more competitive marketplace system. And your website says that you want to eliminate state laws, including something called the Certificate of Need, to increase competition and lower health care costs. Can you explain what that means?
Sure. So there's a rule, there's a law in Virginia, and this is a common law. So no states had this law until, I believe, the 1970s, and then the federal government mandated that all states would have this law. And what it does is it restricts the opening of new medical facilities. So if somebody wants to open a new hospital, a new surgical center, they have to get permission from the existing providers in that area, prove that there's a need for these additional services. So it functions, you know, as an anti-competitive law. It prevents the entry of new competitors. And so recently, the federal government removed this mandate, allowed states to decide for themselves whether they want this law or not. We've seen 17 other states that have repealed this law, and there have been studies done, and they've shown that when you get rid of the law, it encourages the entry of new competitors, and it reduces costs, and it increases access. So to me, that's one of those things that I think is low-hanging fruit. It doesn't cost us any money to get rid of a counterproductive regulation like that, and it could improve access to health care.
I want to talk about a little bit about the campaign itself and sort of the structure in which you find yourself, you know, when I took my basic American government and political science courses. I learned about how the system works and the fact that we have a first-past-the-post, winner-take-all system. So this is why we tend to have a two-party system in this country and why it is so hard for third-party candidates to gain any traction to perform well in elections, but also to get much attention during the campaign. And so you're in kind of this reinforcing cycle where you don't get as much media attention. You're not raising as much money. You don't get allowed into the debates, and so you don't get as much attention. And how do you break out of that cycle, and how do you get your message out?
Well, I think that as a party, a Libertarian Party has been building up for a long time. If you look at since we were established in the 1971, certainly popularity has grown. You look at 4 years ago with Robert Sarvis, he got about 7% of the vote, 150,000 votes. Johnson Weld certainly had a very good campaign that had a strong result. So I think we're slowly on the upswing. And we're in favor of more political choice. We want more choice, more freedom across the board, and that includes in the political arena. I think there's a lot of districts that are uncompetitive. You see about 60% of local House of Delegates races each year are usually uncontested. And that's a shame, because then people have no choice on the ballot. So we're certainly in favor of political reforms that would make it more possible to have more participation, in the democratic process. And that includes things like Virginia has one of the highest requirements for major party status. Libertarian Party has major party status in 37 other states. But Virginia requires you to get 10% on a statewide election, which is very difficult. And what major party status would get you is the ability to get on the ballot without having to have a whole bunch of petitions signed.
Every time around.
Right, exactly, right. For every race. So right. If we didn't have to do that, we would be able to compete in many more districts. A lot of districts where maybe one party or the other is not competitive, but we could be because we're sort of centrist in a way. We're in between the other two parties. And you mentioned first past the post. In Virginia, we don't have any kind of referendum process, and that's the reason why, in spite of 85% of Virginians being in favor of some form of legal marijuana, we don't have that yet.
Kind of following up from that last question, some political analysts say that the better you do, the more you're going to take votes from Ed Gillespie. Are you just kind of going to perform as a spoiler, or are you really running to win in this campaign?
Well, I'm certainly running to win. I'm just in the race because I'm trying to help as many people as possible, as many Virginians as possible. And I think the best way I could do that would be to win. So the whole time we've been running to win, doing everything we can to win. At the same time, it seems like we're becoming a bigger and bigger long shot. But I don't agree at all that, I'm just a spoiler. I don't think the evidence supports that I'm taking votes from Gillespie. If you look at 4 years ago and the second choice of voters who voted for the Libertarian candidate, Robert Sarvis, it was actually about 55% to 45% in favor of McAuliffe in terms of a second choice. So it's pretty even split down the middle. And I kind of disagree with the whole concept of stealing votes. I mean, you had to earn a vote. And I think that, a lot of people who are voting for me wouldn't be voting at all otherwise because they're really disenchanted with the two parties and the two candidates. So I don't think I'm really playing a spoiler role, but I'm just providing a voice, an outlet for people who feel the same way that I do, who agree with me, on the issues and want to voice their support.
Anything I didn't ask you you'd like to mention?
I really think there's a couple of major changes that we need to make to the education system here in Virginia. One of those is we need to change the testing. Right now, a lot of people are talking about whether we're putting too much emphasis on the SOLs, not enough emphasis. I think that's the wrong thing to be talking about. I think that SOLs really can't serve the purpose of holding schools accountable because there's no way to tell from the SOL results, what's the result of the teacher or the school's influence versus some other factor like the student's home life. So I want to move towards a more innovative system of testing that's been pioneered in other places like LA County called growth measure testing. And that evaluates the change in a child's performance over the course of a school year. It allows you to isolate the contribution of a teacher, of a school. You can find what are the highest performing teachers, the highest performing schools, and identify the best practices that they're using to achieve those results and sort of spread those all over the state. I also mentioned that we have a bad charter school program here in Virginia. There's only 9 charter schools because the local school boards decide whether a charter school should be approved. And so that's sort of the fox guarding the hen house. They're in charge of their own competition. So we need to move to a better system such as they have in New York. That is capable of addressing the education inequality that we have in the state where we have some great school districts that perform well year after year, and we have some other school districts that don't perform very well, that are failing their students. And the only objection that I usually get to that is a concern that the regular schools, the non-charter schools, may be worse off because of that. But that's not what we see when we look at the results in other places. Because they're forced to compete for the marginal student, it tends to improve all the schools across the board, which of course is very important because even in places where charter schools have been quite successful, they still tend to be educating a relatively low percentage of the students overall. So the biggest thing to concentrate on is improving the system as a whole, and I think that's one part of doing that.
Cliff Hira is a patent attorney from Mechanicsville and the Libertarian nominee for governor. Mr. Hira, thank you very much for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking time.
It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Finally, I spoke by phone with Ed Gillespie, the Republican nominee for governor. You're running for governor in a state that went for Hillary Clinton by 5 points last year. President Trump's latest Gallup poll numbers this week are around 33% approval. In the past, you've supported immigration reform, and yet some of your messaging in this campaign follows some of the tactics that Trump used. For example, raising a pretty vivid specter of illegal immigration as a threat. And like Trump, you've defended Confederate statues. How do you attract Trump's voters without turning off lots of other voters?
Well, the fact is a majority of Virginians agree with my position that we should not allow for the establishment of sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. If someone is here illegally and they commit a violent crime, we need to cooperate with federal authorities in compliance with federal laws, and they should be deported. And that's something that most Virginians agree with. That's common sense. My opponent cast a tie-breaking vote against a ban on sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And I believe that we should have that ban, that you know, leadership is not just about responding to problems. It's about preventing problems. And we should not have sanctuary cities in the Commonwealth. We need to comply with federal immigration laws. And someone here illegally who commits a crime, they should be deported. And we should cooperate with authorities in that regard. And in terms of statues, the fact is my opponent is the one who injected this into the race when he called for taking down every statue in the Commonwealth of Virginia, the Civil War memorials all around Virginia. I don't agree with that. I think they should stay up. We should add historical context. And, you know, I just disagree with his policy pronouncement that he made in the course of this campaign in favor of removing all of our these historical monuments across the Commonwealth. And when he made that an issue in the campaign and people asked me, do you agree with that? I was clear. I do not agree with that.
I do want to clarify something. When I spoke with Mr. Northam recently, he did say that he is in favor of allowing localities to decide what to do with those statues. And my understanding from that conversation was that in places such as Charlottesville, where the local officials want to take down those statues, it should be up to them.
Well, my view is that the locality should make the decisions as well, but that it would be a mistake for them to vote to take them down. His view is, and what he has said, is that as governor, he will be a vocal advocate for removing the statues. And for those statues that are under state jurisdiction, and there are a number of them, the Lee statue in Richmond, the Jackson statue at VMI, he said he'll do everything in his power as governor to bring those statues down, and I would not.
It's enrollment time again for those seeking health insurance through the markets created by the Affordable Care Act. President Trump has ended cost-sharing payments for health insurers. Many critics say that Republicans in Washington are sabotaging the health care markets for political reasons, in part by discouraging people from enrolling. What is your view of that? And given that you oppose Medicaid expansion, how would you respond as governor to help Virginians gain access to health care?
Well, it's clear to me that we can't count on Washington, D.C. to solve our health care challenges in Virginia. That's why I put forward a specific detailed plan, Health in Our Commonwealth, to make health care more affordable and more accessible to more Virginians. And to your point about the insurance marketplaces, in the exchanges next year, we're probably looking at 56, 57, maybe 58 localities around the Commonwealth where there will only be one insurer. That's no competition at all. That's a captive marketplace, and we need to incentivize more competition.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gillespie. Isn't that in part because of the leadership in Washington in which President Trump and some others have discouraged the markets in ending those payments and saying things like there is no more Affordable Care Act, which is not correct?
Well, the fact is this has occurred without President Trump. This was a result of the Obama administration. We've been heading this way for some time now, and the out-of-pocket expenses for Virginians has skyrocketed about 300% under the Affordable Care Act for copays and deductibles. And, you know, Virginians have been hit very, very hard by higher out-of-cost expenses. And these this move toward, you know, a single insurer in the exchanges has been taking place for some time now. It's not like we didn't have zero last year and we're going to have 58 next year. This has been coming for some time. And we need to incentivize more competition in the marketplace. And I believe we should allow for competition across state lines. We don't have to wait for the federal government to do that. We can do that with a compact with surrounding states and allow for their insurers to compete in our marketplace, allow for Virginia insurers to compete in theirs. More competition would help bring down prices, as would more competition in the provider marketplace, which I put forward in my plan. And I am the only candidate in this race for governor who has a plan for health care for Virginians that we can do at the state level. My opponent's only response is, well, we need to have, you know, Medicaid expansion, which is not going to occur. And we need to have a plan for the state of the Commonwealth of Virginia that I've put forward at the state level that would make healthcare more accessible and more affordable to more Virginians. People can see it on my website, edforvirginia.com. You can go to the issues page and you'll see my healthcare plan.
The Senate Majority Leader, Tommy Norment, came out in favor of at least decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana. What's your, you still have the same position on that, or are you rethinking your position on marijuana decriminalization?
I put forward a plan, a criminal justice reform plan. Again, it's one of my 20 detailed specific policy proposals that I call this reform three strikes you're in, which would say for the first two possessions, simple possessions of marijuana, that those would not be criminal charges. And the fact is, we've got to align the penalty with the offense, and a conviction for a marijuana possession and a crime on your record, you know, can dog somebody for the rest of their lives. And I think that's out of whack in terms of the nature of the penalty. So my view is for the first and second offenses of simple possession, they would not be criminal charges. The third possession, you would be subject to the criminal justice system. And I think that's a smart way of getting the balance right in terms of aligning the penalty with the offense. But I don't support legalizing marijuana or decriminalizing marijuana. I think the data and the science is clear, the impact it has on a formative brain up to the age of 25. I have come to conclude that legalizing medical marijuana in Virginia is the right thing for my fellow Virginians, and I do support that in a tightly regulated manner.
Ed Gillespie is a former chairman of the Republican Party of Virginia and the Republican National Committee and the Republican nominee for governor. Mr. Gillespie, thanks for taking the time to speak with me. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you for making time for me. I enjoyed it.
There was much more to all of those conversations, and you can hear them in full at WMRA.org. In addition to interviews with the candidates, WMRA has been covering this year's elections in Virginia with profiles of the races and districts in our region, and you'll find all of that coverage at our website. Support for WMRA's News and Information Fund, which makes our award-winning coverage possible, is provided by Bibb and Dolly Frazier, Les and Johnny Grady, Klein May Realty, Eugene Stoltzfus Architects, Joy Loving, Janet Trettner, Nancy Barber, Pam and Jim Huggins, an anonymous donor, and by a grant from a donor-advised fund of the Community Foundation of Harrisonburg and Rockingham County. If you'd like to support our news coverage, go to WMRA.org, mouse over News, then click on News and Information Fund. And don't forget to keep up each morning with the WMRA Daily. It's our weekday early morning news podcast. You'll find information about subscribing to the podcast and how to listen. It's right there at WMRA.org. I'm Bob Levicky, WMRA's news director and morning edition host. I'll talk to you in the morning. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday.